This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas. A little bit of pop culture bits thrown in. There's no time to dwell, none at all, because some sweet little humdingers are dropping this week. It's like the streamers and Hollywood studios knew that St. Bridget was a fan of binging and the patron saint of television. Or maybe that's, maybe I read that in the Frank Cottrell Boyce's Millions book. I blame Damien. Anyway, shut up. For this bank holiday weekend, there's a little something for everyone in the audience. And if you happen to have smallies or enjoy animation, oh boy, have we got you sorted. So, shall we begin?
Mr. and Mrs. Be nice to each other.
No. Wrong clip. Let's go again.
I'm Jay.
I'm John.
Love and happiness.
Banking card and marriage registration.
Something that can make you do right.
We're married.
Yeah, I guess we're married.
Make you do right.
They didn't bring up that we'd be paired until the last interview.
It's an old KGB tactic. They draw less attention as a couple.
Very romantic.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Prime Video is a shiny new TV series adaptation of the 2005, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie action movie. With a slight twist to the plot from the original, this one sees a pair of spies whose cover involves them posing as a married couple. As if all the spying and danger wasn't enough, they become slightly unstuck when they, yes, actually start to have a genuine attraction for each other. So cute, and so many dead bodies. Originally, this show was a collaboration between Atlanta's Donald Glover and Fleabag's Phoebe Waller-Bridge, both writing and starring, but yes, the dreaded creative differences stepped in and saw Waller-Bridge drop out of the project, soon to be replaced by the extremely likable and fab Maya Erskine. Glover, along with his Atlanta co-writer, still stars and writes. With a quite ridiculous ensemble cast full of all the cameos through the various missions. They include John Turturro, Paul Dano, Michael Cole, Parker Posey, Sarah Paulson, Sharon Horgan, etc, etc, etc. Listen, it's Donald Glover teaming up with his Atlanta and Fargo writer. There is absolutely no way you can ignore Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which has all its 8 episodes now up on Prime Video. I love it. Binge dropping them all. That's your weekend sorted. Think of it as Mr. and Mrs. Smith meets the Americans. What is not to love?
Orion, I'm gonna get you to overcome your fears if it kills me.
Whoa.
My job is the most fundamental. I show up every night and I bring it.
Bring what?
Dark. And it's probably the most important job too, because without darkness, the others don't get to do their bits.
Wait, there's more?
There's sleep.
What?
Don't worry, she's a professional. There's sweet dreams. Quiet. Unexplained noises. And of course, insomnia.
The first of a trilogy of unbelievable animated streaming content, Orion and the Dark on Netflix is the perfect distraction for the smallies this bank holiday weekend, as the grown-ups watch all the sports ball. But hey, you may want to hold that thought of thinking it's just for kids, because this one is written by screenwriter Charlie Kaufman, who gave us, yes, Being John Malkovich. What? Based on the children's book by Emma Yarlett, the film follows a kid named Orion, voiced by Jacob Tremblay, and it's about a young boy who's afraid of heights, pets, and rendered nearly catatonic by the worst of all perils, the dark. And so along comes the Dark, yes, himself, to take Orion on a nighttime trip to prove to the youngster that the only thing to fear is fear itself. The Dark is voiced by Paul Walter Hauser, and from there we get to meet Sleep, Unexplained Noises, Insomnia, Sweet Dreams, and Quiet, along with the slightly obnoxious Light. This looks like an absolute belter. It's kind of giving me Rise of the Guardians meets Inside Out vibes. And if that weren't enough, Werner Herzog narrates. Why, I'm telling you, this is gold. Gold on them there streaming streets. So scratch that, let the kids watch the stressful sports ball and the grown-ups can enjoy this fun animated romp. So that is Orion and the Dark, which is now on Netflix.
Do I know you, man?
No, but I've been watching over you your whole life.
Who are you?
I know it's cool. Your grandmother was a guardian, sworn to protect humanity. Now the duty of protecting it is yours.
Very funny, right?
It's time to start your training.
Oh, it's on.
Another fab animated distraction dropping on Saturday the 3rd. The Tiger's Apprentice on Paramount Plus is an action-packed martial arts epic based on the first of Lawrence Yeap's children's book trilogy. A young boy in San Francisco meets a talking tiger named Mr. Who and discovers he's the latest in a long line of guardians who protect an ancient phoenix from evildoers. Oh yeah! What's not to love? Featuring the voice cast of Lucy Liu, Henry Golding, Sandra Oh, Michelle Yeoh and Brandon Suhu, this is definitely one for kids age 7, 8 plus, and any kids really out there currently enjoying the Percy Jackson series. And you know what? If they like this movie, then I'd obviously highly recommend the books that are readily available in any decent bookshop. Quality entertainment all around. That's The Tiger's Apprentice, which is on Paramount Plus from Saturday the 3rd. And completing the trilogy of epic animated distractions for juniors, hot off its recent cinema run, I'm delighted to report that the absolutely wonderful, fun, entertaining and gorgeous looking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants Mayhem is now on Paramount Plus. Shamefully overlooked for best animated feature, this is how a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie should be. It's complete box office and is not just for kids. The nostalgia factor is strong with this one. That's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, which is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Oh my god, so good. Such a good movie. So there you go. And I know I started by saying we had some distractions for the smallies, but I'm not going to lie, those animated movies are all as much for adults as they are for the little ones. So don't be shy. Don't be shy and go jump right in. This next one, definitely for, shall we say, people of an older vintage.
One, two.
We are the world. We are the children.
The greatest artists of a generation came together to save some lives.
Must be in a dream, huh?
Hello, hello.
But we only had one night to get this right.
Let's get this party started.
I received this call from Herb Belafonte, and he wants to do some kind of a song for famine relief in Africa.
The Greatest Night in Pop on Netflix dives deep into an event which occurred in LA on January 25th, 1985, when over 40 of the era's most popular musicians gathered in a studio for an overnight session to record a top secret project, the charity single We Are the World. Coming 2 months after the release of Bob Geldof's hugely successful Band-Aid single, Do They Know It's Christmas, this documentary examines how that night came together and features never-before-seen footage, as well as interviews with some of the artists, including Bruce Springsteen, Diana Ross, Lionel Richie, Huey Lewis, Cyndi Lauper, Tina Turner, and Kenny Loggins. Wow, wow, wow. What a lineup and what a banger it was. Who wasn't walking around the streets?
We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones that make a brighter day. So let's start watching this documentary on Netflix.
Let the nostalgia kick in. And due to its probable success, I would expect a Band-Aid documentary from Netflix within the next year. That is The Greatest Night in Pop, which is now on Netflix.
One, two, ready.
You can be anybody and be a part of the Detroit Youth Choir. We're the underdog out to prove what we can do.
when I sing, it's like I'm in a different world.
I'm pouring my emotions out onto the audience.
It all does take work, but if I keep going, I'm going to reach my mark.
The amount of dedication it takes to be in DYC is on the same level as a high school athlete.
Hella high water. I want to be able to take these kids to the next big stage.
More music this week comes in the form of Choir on Disney Plus, which is a 6-part documentary series following the kids of the Detroit Youth Choir as they prepare for the performance of a lifetime. Similar to shows like Cheer and Last Chance U, which, by the way, are completely amazing, we experience the highs and lows of life growing up in Detroit, navigating the challenges of balancing family, school, and singing, all while pursuing their dreams. Following their 2019 appearance on America's Got Talent, it's a pivotal time for the choir and its director Anthony White, as he's faced with the combined challenges of replacing several key members, keeping the choir relevant in Detroit, and finding the next big opportunity that will put them back in the national spotlight. Sadly, the Lions got absolutely stuffed and fell apart in the NFC Championship. But anyway, the dream is over, so maybe this will cheer us all up. But we know what will happen. We will laugh, we will cry, we will sing while watching Choir, which is now all up on Disney Plus. Another reality docuseries, and one which, I'm going to be honest, I'm for a sports ball doc, I'm not exactly excited for. It's done in the style of Formula One, Drive to Survive, and this one, it's NASCAR Full Speed on Netflix. Fueled by passion and NASCAR Cup glory, drivers and their teams compete for the championship and the chance to make history in, yet again, another quality behind-the-scenes sports doc. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe the car is going round and around and around and around is a calming watch. And maybe there's more to it, but Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, and possibly Days of Thunder, they're kind of more my speed. But hold on. They were kind of awesome. So maybe I'm judging this NASCAR thing all wrong. We'll have to find out. So that is NASCAR Full Speed, which is now on Netflix.
I'm sorry. Don't hate me. I got car stuff and then I couldn't find my keys.
You don't get to just blow in here acting like you care all of a sudden.
I'm not acting. Ma is dead.
Read the will, please.
Your mother rarely spoke of her childhood.
And she never spoke of it. And she always dodged our questions.
Well, in the end, she decided to talk.
I had promised myself I would take all of this with me to my grave. I didn't want to burden you with the weight of it. But I must confess.
Black Cake on Disney Plus is a family drama wrapped in a murder mystery and a global setting which spans decades and various timelines. Based on Charmaine Wilkerson's best-selling 2022 novel Black Cake, it's set in the late 60s when a runaway bride named Covey disappears into the surf off the coast of Jamaica and is feared drowned. In present-day California, a widow named Eleanor Bennett loses her battle with cancer, leaving her two estranged children a flash drive that holds previously untold secrets of her journey from the Caribbean to America. Featuring these twin timelines, the 8-episode series tells a story of identity and struggle. So that's family secrets, murder, globe-hopping drama, all over the gaff, and produced by Oprah. Sure, why not? That's Black Cake, which is now streaming on Disney+. Also out this week, we have Love and WWE, Bianca and Montez on Disney+. And this sees one of wrestling's hottest couples at the moment, Bianca Belair and Montez Ford, embark on the road to WrestleMania. As Montez continues his ascent, Bianca fights to hold on to her title. With the support of their tight-knit friends, their family and fellow superstars, the duo attempt to pull off the impossible. As far as reality series go, yeah, this one looks half decent, especially as the two leads are extremely likable. And hey, if you like your wrestling, feck it, why not? That's Love and WWE, Bianca and Montez. All 6 episodes are now up on Disney+. Alexander, the Making of a God on Netflix looks at the man himself, king of the ancient Greek city of Macedon, who was widely considered to be one of history's greatest and most successful military commanders. By the age of 30, he had created one of the largest empires in history, and through expert interviews and expensive-looking reenactments, This doc combines to reveal the extraordinary life of Alexander the Great and his burning desire to conquer the world. These historical series are extremely popular on Netflix, and there's no reason why this one shouldn't be decent enough either. So that's Alexander, The Making of a God, now on Netflix. For any fans of anime out there, Seven Deadly Sins has a sequel, and it's called Seven Deadly Sins, Four Nights of the Apocalypse, and that drops this week on Netflix. As a prophecy of doom unfolds on the peaceful land of Britannia, a pure-hearted boy sets out on a journey of discovery and, of course, revenge. One for the hardcore anime heads out there, that's Seven Deadly Sins, Four Nights of the Apocalypse, which is now on Netflix. And finishing it off streaming with a few pretty decent looking non-English series and movies. First up, we have A Bloody Lucky Day on Paramount Plus, which is a new South Korean series and sounds as mad as a bag of cats. It's the story of an ordinary taxi driver who is offered a high price for a fare to take a passenger to a remote destination. He reluctantly agrees and then soon realizes that his passenger is a serial killer. Oh, Jesus. Jesus, lads. He must now embark on a terrifying drive using all of his cunning and resourcefulness to survive. Absolutely, you had me at serial killer and a taxi. I'm in. That is A Bloody Lucky Day, which is now on Paramount Plus. Coming from Belgium, we have Will on Netflix, which looks at two young police officers who find themselves torn between collaboration and resistance as they navigate the Nazi-occupied Antwerp during World War II. Another important feature for this one is that director Tim Melantz is behind the feature film, and he's perhaps best known for directing on big English language TV shows like Peaky Blinders, The Terror and Legion. So yeah, another cracker. That's the Belgian World War II drama Will, which is now on Netflix. Let's talk about Chew on Netflix. Is a steamy Taiwanese rom-com series which tells the story of a part-time vlogger, Chu Ai, who uses her channel to speak candidly about sex. But yes, in real life, she finds that the subject is a smidge more trickier. Decent hype and buzz for this one. So that's Let's Talk About Chu from Taiwan, now on Netflix. And finally on streaming this week, we have Reina Roja, or Red Queen, which is a new series from Spain based on a best-selling trilogy of Spanish thriller novels. When the son of a powerful tycoon is found gruesomely murdered and the daughter of Spain's wealthiest man is kidnapped, the Red Queen organization is set in motion with the help of Basque cop John Gutierrez, who attempts to solve the murder by seeking the help in the form of Antonia Scott, a woman with an IQ of 242, who was once seen as the future of policing, but was then discarded after a series of events unfolded. Sketchy pasts. Again, this one has all the buzz, plenty of hype. That's Reina Roja, or Red Queen, from Spain, which is now all up on Prime Video. And, nearly out of breath there. That is your streaming lot. Small but perfectly formed. I do believe there is something for everyone out there to inhale. However, if you do fancy getting out of the house this weekend, why not pop down to your local cinema where a new trilogy of releases awaits your eyeballs?
Listen, Monk, you need some time off. Why don't you go back and spend a little more time with your family?
You know that all successful writers are tormented by their families.
You look fat.
Okay.
Welcome home, baby!
How the fuck?
I don't feel like much of a writer lately.
Your books change people's lives.
And something I've written never changed your life.
Absolutely. My dining room table was wobbly as hell.
Oh my gosh.
Before your last book came out. It was like perfect. I'm a working boy.
American Fiction sees Jeffrey Wright play Monk, a frustrated novelist who's fed up with the establishment that profits from black entertainment and which relies on tired and offensive tropes. To prove his point, he uses a pen name to write an outlandish black book of his own, a book that propels him to the heart of hypocrisy and the madness he claims to disdain. Ah yes, another week, another awards cracker lands on our screen. Based on the 2001 book Erasure by Percival Everett, this is Cord Jefferson's feature film directorial debut, and what a debut it is. I absolutely adored this movie. The cast were so wonderful. Jeffrey Wright, Sterling K. Brown, Erica Alexander and Issa Rae all being simply superb and so engaging and watchable. The whole author and publisher inside track makes for some fantastic commentary about the state of the literary world, and when it all goes slightly bullwort, it is so, so funny. Like, serious comedy here. Serious. Some of my favourite movies, TV shows, books are those which, you know, do that world building thing that takes you away and makes you feel and care and actually give a crap about the characters you're seeing or reading. And American Fiction is a perfect example of that. Oh my God. Like The Holdovers and All of Us Strangers, this movie will sweep you away into the world of its mesmerizing characters, its pure comedy gold, and yes, its tough moments and strong satirical tone that happily never feels preachy. Get ready for 2 hours of pure cinematic joy. American Fiction is now in cinemas.
Whoa! Hey! There's a cat in there!
Oh my God, you're Ellie friggin' Conway.
Author of Argyle series, Ellie Conway! I am such a fan!
Oh yeah? What is it you do?
Espionage.
Would you
sign my book? Here we go.
I love this book.
Staying in the world of publishing and in a slightly different approach, reclusive author Ellie Conway writes best-selling espionage novels about a secret agent named Argyle, who's on a mission to unravel a global spy syndicate. However, when the plot of her books starts to mirror the covert actions of a real-life spy organization, the line between fiction and reality begin to blur. Oh, lordy lord. Matthew Vaughn returns with his new movie Argyle, which carries many elements and tropes associated with his Kingsman film series. This one features Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, Henry Cavill, Samuel Jackson, Bryan Cranston, Catherine O'Hara, Dua Lipa, etc, etc, etc. Okay, I thought it was entertaining enough. Yeah, it was decent. Kept me engaged throughout. The big difference for me here between this and the Kingsman movies is, while the Kingsman ones were 15s and 16s, this is a 12A, which kind of sees the usual comedic hardcore violence that we come across is basically less, well, it's probably still comical, but it's much more lightweight, and it doesn't feel like consequence is there. There's no consequence or cost, just, it's, I don't know, it just took me out. It looks fab, it has plenty of fun twists, like a ridiculous amount of twists, like any good spy novel, and has plenty of eye-popping action sequences all played out to a banging soundtrack. However, speaking of the soundtrack, the use of that new Beatles song Now and Then unfortunately enters the realm of overdoing it. Come on, Matthew, get over it. We didn't need to hear it 3 or 4 times. I blame Apple on that. Ultimately, Rockwell and Howard were fantastic and are the stars of the show, hands down. And if you came to see anybody else on that poster, you will be absolutely disappointed, because it is Rockwell and Howard's rom-com with spy action. While it never quite reached the heights of a Kingsman movie for me, there was never a dull moment, and most definitely will help you blow away those remaining January cobwebs. Yes, I'm not exactly sounding enthused. For me, The Beekeeper was a better action movie and a lot more fun and possibly more underrated. However, if, you know, if awards fodder is at this point boring the head off you, do you know what? Argyle is now cinemas and should be a helpful distraction if you're in need of some big, dumb fun. Not the greatest piece of cinematic genius you'll ever see, but okay. Oh, very important, you know me, I love a post-credit scene. Well, there is one mid-credit scene here worth staying around for, purely so you can go, what? What's happening? Yeah, the okay and enjoyable enough Argyle is now at cinemas. I know, I can hear you stampeding to the cinemas straight away after that rave. Ah, oh, dear, if only.
What is this place?
We are completely lost.
But your mother... That is not your mother. Looking
at it now. We're trying to get to Jamaica. It all seems so
simple. Don't worry, Chump's gotcha.
So listen, Chump.
What? Did you just call me?
Sorry, I thought your name was Chump.
Yeah, Chump, yeah, that's my name, what?
Right, so listen, Chump.
What did you just call me?
I'm sorry, is everyone else hearing Chump?
What?
In Migration, a family of ducks with an overprotective father decides to leave the safety of a New England pond for an adventurous trip to Jamaica. However, their well-laid plans quickly go awry when they get lost and wind up in New York City. The experience soon inspires them to expand their horizons, open themselves up to new friends, and accomplish more than they ever thought possible. The new animated movie from Illumination, who gave us Despicable Me and Super Mario Brothers, is one most definitely for younger kids. Low on plot, but with some, decent and fun set pieces. I'm not here to pass judgment. As I said, this one is definitely scaling on the too young for me. This is for the smallies, so I'm calling in the professionals, the youths who speak the truths. Let's go talk to some proper reviewers. Yes, we're here. We're live with our intrepid reporters who went to see Migration. We've got Kelsey, Elisa, and Amelia. And it's time for the hardcore review. Kelsey, did you enjoy the movie?
Yeah, I enjoyed it really much. It was really funny. And it was fun.
Amelia?
Yes.
Yes. She's nodding her head, people. She's nodding her head. Hit me. Hit me, Elisa.
I really loved it. Yeah, it was great.
Hardcore reviews there. So tell me, favorite characters?
My favorite character was Gwen because she was extremely funny.
You definitely like Gwen best, yes? Yeah. That's another nod from the corner over there. And yourself?
I don't know what his name is, but Gwen's brother.
Oh, yeah?
He's funny and sometimes a bit too serious.
Worried about everything. Was there any parts in the movie that you really enjoyed?
Yes, there was. I liked when they were like, when the new birds were coming into the lake and Gwen and Gwen's brother went over to say hi. I think I liked that part.
What was your favourite part?
Probably when they started the migration.
So like when they finally left?
Yeah.
You're just going to nod your head, aren't you? Did you have a favourite part?
Birds came back.
When the birds landed. Would you recommend it to other kids to go see?
Yeah, I'd recommend it a lot. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, probably.
And obviously you enjoyed the poop scene when poor old Gwen was afraid to go to the toilet in the air and the man was like, sure, go on, that's what we do. That was very funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
Oh, and did you enjoy the little sneaky, wasn't there a new short at the start? Minions.
Yeah.
On the moon.
That was
yeah, you like that?
Yeah.
I want to watch that.
Again.
So yes, there's a secret Minions new short, obviously getting ahead of the new Despicable Me. So that was, so get in early. So all around, show me the thumbs up. Yes. Seven thumbs here. Absolutely fantastic. What? Sorry, I put my own up. And today's maths lesson is provided by Kelsey. Thank you very much, guys.
Bye.
There you go. I didn't even give them time to take their school bags off. I was like, talk to me on my dodgy phone and let's make a shambolic recording of an awesome review. So thank you to the girls. Fantastic, fantastic stuff. And that is your cinema. Yeah, that's your cinema for the week. So yeah, plenty of reasons to get out of the house or leave the house because it's a big sports ball weekend, folks. And if you don't like sports ball, you might want to leave Dodge because it's possibly one of the biggest, and I don't mean Super Bowl biggest, although I'll definitely be doing a deep dive into Super Bowl ads next week. Nope, this weekend it's the battle of musical chants and songs. Is it too early to have championship deciders? Could this be one of them? Oh my god, because on Friday, head to Allez les Bleus at Stade de France, and it's going to be a very stressful Friday night as the Six Nations begins. Oh my god. While on Sunday, North London forever, whatever the weather, Diamond Geezers attempt to topple those folks who'll never walk. alone. Except on Sunday when they walk home alone to Anfield. Very sad. Hopefully. Did I mention stressful? Yes, it's going to be vomit-inducing carnage. But remember, when all is said and done, it's only a game and we're all God's children. So while the battle of the sports ball tunes rage, in the real world of new music, there is only one release worth talking about this week. I know you're worried there. My house is not on fire. That was the neighbour's fire alarm briefly going off in the background. I know you're worried. It's okay. I'm safe.
Every night when we say goodbye, I know that I can see myself as a man. When I put on that suit, I don't have to stay mute. I can talk all the time, 'cause my shoulders are wide, and I'm falling like the leaves on Lady Grant.
Prelude to Ecstasy is the debut album by British indie rock band The Last Dinner Party. Hailing from London, Abigail, Lizzie, Emily, Georgia and Aurora formed the band in 2021, just before they began uni, and suddenly were shot into the limelight when their debut single Nothing Matters became a massive viral hit. COVID kicked in, it all went a bit quiet. They continued making music, and then in July 2022, they ended up as support act to the Rolling Stones bill at Hyde Park. What? It all kicked off. Festival tours and dive bar gigs built the hype. And now finally, having topped most people's bands to watch in 2024 lists, they have released the debut album. Oh yeah. Having been absolutely blessed to have seen them in the Workman's last Christmas, I can confirm they are as wild and insane in concert as they sound and they look, and give off very strong Kate Bush, Florence and Susie and the Banshees vibes. They've already announced a gig this year for the Olympia Theatre in October, and I fully expect them to be a smash hit at Glastonbury. So all aboard The Last Dinner Party train. It's leaving the station and you don't want to miss this fun ride. Oh, boop, 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 boop. Very, very excited. Prelude to Ecstasy is now available wherever you get your tunage. Galway rock band New Dad released their latest album Modra recently, so it's important, very important, that they also get a shout out as someone who is a massive fan of Bia Badoobi and the recent resurgence in shoegaze music. This new album is perfectly set up to capture the mood and the vibes of a band discovering themselves, their true sound, and with their pretty awesome live gigs, Modra will definitely put New Dad on the map. I expect them to be quite popular on the festival circuits this summer. Oh, I love me a mood. I just love me a bit of mood music. So that's Modra from New Dad, which is also out wherever you get your music. Right, next up, a change of plan. Three things can feck right off because we are into February. 2024 has well and truly kicked off, which can mean only one thing. It's time for the Here and Back Again annual, even though it's only the first time I've ever done it, Pop Culture Predictions. Very exciting. 2024, let's be having ya, as they say. 10 nonsensical but possible outcomes that may occur according to our crystal ball. Well, actually it's a magic 8-ball cycling helmet, but you get the drift. So, first up, yes, let's discuss superhero fatigue. Marvel, Marvel, Marvel. The king is dead. Long live the dead. No, the king. I mean the king. We're predicting here that 2024 will be both a stellar $1 billion year while simultaneously a shocker year for Disney Marvel and Sony Marvel. Deadpool 3 will see Disney back in the billion-dollar club for the first time since 2019's Avengers Endgame, while Sony Marvel, while not exactly reaching a billion, will get close or upwards of about 800 million, with the always sketchy but quite enjoyable Venom 3. However, unfortunately, the sad tale that released around these two winners will be the dead fish heads that are Madam Web and Kraven the Hunter. Absolute minger alerts on these two. Cheap to make, cheaper to look at. Unless folks decide to hate watch them, they are dead upon release. Oh, woo. But anyway, at least Deadpool and Venom 3 will save the day. By the way, we're also just throwing in the little nugget here that Taylor Swift and at least two players from Wrexham will turn up in Deadpool 3. Just saying. Next up, we have DC, and well, with only one DC movie releasing this year and it not even being in the DC Extended Universe but coming from the Elseworlds storylines, Joker 2 or Folie à Deux will do so much better than recent DC attempts. However, will it reach the billion that Joker 1 made? One thing holding it back, and no, it's not Lady Gaga's Harley Quinn, but that other extremely badly kept secret. It, folks, is a musical. I completely predict that your average moviegoer will not know that it's a musical due to the fact that Warner will do their Wonka and Color Purple trick and hide the musical angle from his trailer, and this will obviously annoy and freak people out and ultimately see Joker 2 fall oh so slightly short of its $1 billion target worldwide. Based on these two predictions, we are further predicting that the entertainment media will officially declare superhero fatigue an epidemic and something which studios will not be able to recover from, while also stating that superhero fatigue is a nonsense and a fad and that studios and the genre are in great health. It'll just flip between the various release dates above. Next up, while the NFL will forever, oh my god, forever regret ignoring Taylor Swift as being too girly and too poppy for their manly Super Bowl halftime show and for booking Usher this year, we predict that before the year is out, Tay-Tay will have been booked to play next year's Super Bowl, Super Bowl 59, where she will perform live for the first time her new song declaring her eternal love for Travis Kelce, or her new song taking down her ex-boyfriend Travis Kelce. One thing we are fairly certain of is that she won't be playing any Republican conventions in the coming months in 2024. With the Oscars fast approaching and with Jimmy Kimmel, the safe hands, presenting this year's award show, we predict that John Mulaney will be revealed as next year's Oscar presenter. Based on his epic Governor's Award showing this year, why not? Let John do his thing. What a bit of a ledge. Well, unless the Academy fall asleep at the wheel and the Golden Globes sneak in and nab him for that. So that's John Mulaney, Oscars 2025, possibly 2026. It's going to happen. You know it is. In the world of streaming, we're going to go with a prediction that we have hinted at numerous times before, and that is that finally one of the big streamers will either fold or be folded into a larger streamer. The untouchables right now are still Netflix, Disney+, Prime Video and Apple+. So one of either Paramount Plus, Max or Peacock will hit that big old wall, and you know what? My money is firmly on both Paramount Plus and Peacock not making it out of 2024 alive or in the shape that we know them as now. Studio-wise, I never thought we'd see the day where a similar situation to the above collapse would take effect. But due to overwhelming debts and tricksy streaming costs spiralling, I feel either Paramount or Warner are on the ropes, in trouble. Warner actually have one of their strongest release slates in years, so may survive a takeover. However, Paramount, like Paramount Plus, could easily be bought up and sold for parts. And that's where the Vegas money will go. So Paramount, watch your back, watch your back. Looking at world cinema and streaming, it feels like it's ripe for a prediction that Japanese cinema and content will have a massive upswing in 2024, joining South Korea and India as some of the most successful, influential and hottest non-English regions. From Nintendo to genre content, their resurgence is only the beginning of a stellar few years ahead. So that's Japan kicking ass and taking names in 2024. Nearly there now, animation. It says in the tea leaves here that 2024 will be one of the biggest years for animated movies ever, with the strikes reducing the slates of most studios and with the general box office numbers falling across the board. Family-friendly animated content still remains one of the biggest sources of comfort for folks out there. And hence, when the end of the year global top 10 is revealed for 2024, our prediction is that it will have the most animated movies ever counted in one single year. And finally, for our last prediction, the end of days will truly be upon us when it is revealed that the first fully AI script will go into production, be released and prove to be not actually that bad. I've seen worse than the Netflix movie of the week, or slightly more coherent than those Marvel TV shows. This will all lead to the culture wars of 2024, where people will actually ask, is AI really that bad? Here's a clue, people. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And there you go. Your top 10 here and back again. Annual predictions for 2024 are complete. Some hits, all the misses. It's going to be an intriguing, fascinating and box office year. And we'll be here, we'll be present, we'll be accounted for, and we will prove how wrong we were throughout the year. This is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast, wishing you all the best, and until next week, stay safe, binge happy, and happy St. Bridget's Day. Well, hello. Hello there, post-credit traveler. Welcome, as always, to the Thunderdome. There was you, thinking I'd ignore the poor old three things in pop culture this week. But no, there's too much happening. So here we are, hiding in the post-credits to discuss so much crap that's happening in the entertainment world, and we will begin first with a story we mentioned a few weeks back, where Danny Boyle and the lovely, lovely, lovely Alex Garland were shopping around their idea and back in the zombie saddle for 28 years later, and hoping that they could, get someone to buy it so they could make it. They were thrown in a part two because they were committed to the cause, which would also be written by Garland. Boyle was down to direct the first project, with the sequel's director to be determined. To be determined at a later stage for the second one. Also, Cillian Murphy, whose career was launched thanks to the original movie, is also returning as an executive producer, and who knows, maybe he'll rock up for a cameo as a nod to the first movie. And hey, having dealt with those Quiet Place creatures, sure, he's a natural at this stage. Well, the good news is that according to The Hollywood Reporter and the various trades, the situation has been resolved and the sale has been sorted, as it came down to a battle between Warner Brothers and Sony, with Sony emerging the victor. So it's happening, people. 28 years later, Danny Boyle, Alex Garland, zombie freaks ahoy. Huzzah! Next up, again, something we mentioned recently, that fantastic Black Mirror episode USS Callister, which, as you remember, is a dark, grim, Star Trek, Twilight Zone-inspired episode, which starred Jesse Plemons. And I'll say it again, if you haven't seen it, what are you doing with your life? It looks like Netflix has greenlit a episode spin-off series. Oh, interesting. Now, before you get excited, no words yet if director Toby Haynes is involved or scriptwriters William Bridges and Charlie Brooker. However, I don't give a crap. It's three episodes. It's that world, which I absolutely adored. And hopefully this one can hold a slight candle to the original. So that is the USS Callister, a three-episode spin-off, which seemingly is going into production later this year. What? Possibly the biggest and most impactful news of the week that a lot of us older folk won't even notice, unless you're a cool cat who insists on being on TikTok, is the news that the Universal Music Group, one of the world's biggest record labels, have begun removing its artists' music from TikTok after contract negotiations between the two companies collapsed and failed to result in a new licensing agreement. Uh-oh! Artists like Taylor Swift, Drake, Harry Styles are now starting to disappear off social media as UMG claimed that TikTok were attempting to bully them into accepting a bad deal for both themselves and their artists. Well, mostly themselves, I'd say. Will other record labels now row in behind UMG to attempt to take down TikTok? Or will they sit back and attempt to allow their own tunage to rise in popularity on the platform? Who knows? All we can say is that, like the recent Saltburn TikTok phenom, there'll definitely be murder on the dance floor in the coming months before this one gets sorted. And we're going to throw in one little extra because it's such beautiful news. Praise the Lord, Idris Elba is getting back on a plane for a second season of Hijack after its first season was a smash hit for Apple. Surely, stop calling me Shirley, he won't be on a Hijack plane again because that would be just careless. Careless! Maybe it's a train or a cruise ship. Anyways, who cares? After the glorious, high-octane and beautifully trashy first season, sign me up for this second season of Hijack. Oh yeah. And that's it. Good times. I haven't actually even thought about what music we're going to go with this week. So I'll just surprise you. I have to go have a think and then I'll just throw it on there. So take care. And I'll see you on the dark side.